Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Welcome to the Will Within Podcast. This is your home for shared stories of hope, perseverance, will, and inspiration. Join us today as we share another story that brings to life the underlying beat of our lives. Consider us your virtual friends. Let's get inspired.
Welcome to the Will Within Podcast, and I'm your host, Regina Pontus. Today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I usually ask the guest if they could give me their life story and then go into how they developed their faith and whatever the story of hope, will, perseverance, or inspiration is. But Kay's book started right off the bat. So we're going to start a little differently. We're going to ask her to go right into the story from when she was a child. The book is called Red Bird Phoenix, and it's one of a trilogy. And it's very moving. I was so intrigued by this story, and I hope to God that somebody will take this woman up on her offer to tell the story far and wide. So without any further ado, Kay Cordell. Kay, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me, and your book had me enthralled the entire time. I didn't want to put it down. And I usually talk to people about their faith journeys and the situations that they found themselves in, but your book starts with that. So I'm just going to ask you to start from the beginning, and then we've got 30 minutes to go through this whole thing. I think people are going to be enthralled and praying for you the entire time.
Well, I appreciate this, Regina. It's an honor to be able to discuss Red Bird Phoenix. This is the first book in a trilogy of The Hat Man, and then a counseling book, When Forgiveness Isn't Enough. I grew up in a rural area, Northwest Arkansas, very poor, in a poverty level that was excruciating for all of us children, and had parents who were very abusive, not only to us children, but to each other. And it was a way that it was hard to get away and break that cycle. And in studying and writing my books, I have went back and found that incest is on both sides of my family, six generations back. So it's a generational sin that doesn't quit giving. And in that dynamic, I had a little sister born when I was 4 years old, 4.5 years old. And I immediately had to start raising her. And then I had a brother born when I was 12. So I had two other siblings trying to care for, and yet try to do all the chores, cooking, cleaning. And it was a task that no child should ever have to undertake. But unfortunately, there's millions of children, not only here in the U.S., but worldwide, who are living in similar situations, Regina.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Who's Simon? Yeah, was your older brother? Simon was your older brother, correct? I just want to get Samson.
Oldest brother. When he was 9, he started participating in my abuse with my mother.
Okay.
She was deemed later to be a sociopath. And she had that sociopathic behavior, mentality. And unfortunately, he grew up with the same behavior. And he not only molested me, he molested his other children. It's just been carried on. And my sister, she was born, as I said, at 4.5 years old. Basically, I had to be the oldest child because of the conditions that were in the home. And I remember climbing up in a wooden back chair at 4.5, 5 years old, building a fire in an old wood cook stove and trying to put together scrambled eggs in a cast iron skillet, trying to feed my baby sister and keep her alive and myself. And it was an untenable situation. We, as a country, as people, we've yet to face the horror of sexual abuse. I grew up, went on to college, graduated from Arkansas Tech University here in Russellville, Arkansas, and Boise State University in Boise, Idaho. My whole focus growing up was to get away. And I left when I was 18 in Redbird, Phoenix, but I could not take my baby brother and sister with me. They were left in this situation. When my sister got 18 and graduated high school, I went back and got her, took her away with me, and she went to college. Our baby brother, unfortunately, was left in that situation, and he's paid for it all of his life. Very difficult to function. He's very lucky. He has a wonderful woman in his life who is basically good to him as she can be, loves him. And he's had that at least for himself.
Yes, there's a grace there.
My oldest brother died in 2014, a man without God. He would go into a restaurant and sit there and scream, "Why can't God just kill me?" And he died evidently in that same horrifying condition. Outcast in the little community of Kingston, Arkansas. People hated us children because our dad, Aaron Russell, was the meanest man around. Everybody was afraid of him. And I'm finding out more and more what a horrible man he was. He not only was mean to my mother, but he was mean to the rest of us. And their sexuality was sick, not only for each other, but for us children. I start the span of Redbird Phoenix when I'm just a small child to I Leave Home.
Right. Yes.
And it's a book well worth reading.
Oh, it totally is. And also the abuse your father gave to his parents, so much so that they end up having to leave. It's the whole thing.
They
is
were
just terrifying.
They were godly people. Both were ministers. He tried to force them. They all owned a farm together. My uncle, his brother John, and Grandpa and Grandma Russell all owned several hundreds of acres of farm. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to cheat not only the grandparents out of the farm, but my Uncle John also. And they had a love-hate relationship. But my grandparents had to leave to keep from having to kill him. And when they left, that removed any bastion of hope or help for us children.
Yeah,
because Grandpa and Grandma, they tried to see that we were fed and that we had something to keep us alive. It was a very harsh existence. We might have pinto beans for supper and that'd be it. And then in the morning, they'd be mashed and put with potatoes and fried in a bean potato cake. And that's what we had for breakfast. And it was a hard existence, but it grew in me a kernel of resistance.
Yeah.
And I determined that I was going to get away and do something different. And
let me ask you a question, if I can. Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
At one point, your father tried to sell you off at 12, and the guy thought you were 18. And then you were able to still get away, beatings and everything else continued. And then you talked about your father all of a sudden finding some kind of religion. I don't know, all the different kinds out down in the South, because we're talking about the mid-50s, correct? At that point?
I was born in 47. And I left home in 65. And he became, at one point, somewhere along about the time he tried to sell me and I refused to go, I ate out of the corner of the floor, even though I was cooking the food. But he got God. He'd always
what does
tried
that
to
mean?
Have God.
What does that mean? Okay. Because you were talking about several different religions, and then you said you found your own peace with God. But I don't know what religion you were talking about in that respect.
It was almost like a free wholeness Pentecostal cult that he joined. And he started being holier than thou. Everything that he did was from God, because he heard directly from God's lips to his ears what he is supposed to do to us kids or tell us to do. That's what I talk about getting religion. And he found other people like-minded in the county, and they would go have these house meetings, and he had the Bible memorized, and he could get up and quote scripture and preach all over the room or in any little church that he could take over the service and do. He didn't matter if he went to a church and he thought he is supposed to do what God told him, he'd get up and just rouse everybody around and take over the service. Crazy. Wow. Very abusive behavior, very haranguing the people. And he would look in the mirror and practice his sermons. And everything that we children did wrong, he beat us and said God was telling him to beat us because we was doing wrong against God. And that is the reason that my brother, oldest brother, and my baby brother have become anti-religious. Now, there's a difference in being religious and being a dedicated born-again Christian, Regina.
Yeah.
And I'm saying my father was religious. What he did had no basis in scripture. It had no basis in the goodness of God whatsoever. And I was around 11. He'd go to all these different revivals trying to get his ability to be up front and him do the preaching. And I went to this revival, and this lovely lady was preaching the revival. And that was the first time that I knew definitely if I didn't accept Christ then, I'd become like them. So I made my way to the front, knelt at an old-fashioned altar, and confessed my sins between me and God. And when the service was over, my father almost beat me to death, trying to make me recant, said I was not going to find God before my oldest brother did. Well, my oldest brother died without God. And I'd made up my mind that I wasn't going to be like them. And God, to me, was a loving father. He was my helper and my friend. And because of him, I am who I am today, Regina.
Yeah,
being
very
a genuine
strong
Christian.
What religion was that? Sorry to interrupt. What religion was that that this woman introduced you to? Because it sounds lovely.
She was Pentecostal.
Ah, okay, good.
A Pentecostal wholeness, much like my grandparents. They were both wholeness preachers. And she had a heart full of love, and she taught salvation through Jesus, and that it was to be loving and kind. And everywhere I went to church, I never heard anyone be like my father. So I figured, as mean as he was, I'd be the opposite.
Yes.
Whatever he spouted, I would take the opposite route. Got me a lot of beatings, but I would never give in and say I agreed with him.
Good for you.
His whole life was reflected of everybody agreeing with him. And that's what a cult is. The leader wants to be idolized, worshiped. He never got any followers. I mean, everybody rejected him. When I went to school, I was rejected because I was his daughter. I was made fun of, spit on, laughed at because I had no clothes hardly to wear. I would wear my brother's cast-off jeans with baling twine tying them around my waist. But I went to school. I wore his cast-off shirts. I walked barefooted. And I kept in school and managed to graduate. I knew the only way out of that situation was an education, Regina.
So what did you focus
and
on?
I focused on all kinds of psychological courses that I could take, counseling courses, all through my years of college. That's what I took besides my, I got a degree in communications, theater, drama. I was able to teach business education, and I had a science degree. I got every kind of education I could get. Any course I could take I thought would help me, I took it. I had enough business courses, you know, to teach business education, vocational training. That's what I was focusing on at first. I wanted to be a nurse. That's what I wanted to be, but my health was so bad. They wouldn't let me into nursing school because of my health.
I would think a lot of it would have to do with what you had to experience growing up.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Yes, it was. My period was ongoing constantly. And I was so run down and anemic, they just didn't think I had the health to be a nurse. And that's basically where it was. And when I couldn't be a nurse, I thought, what am I going to do? And I knew my high school was having a lot of business courses. So I took accounting, I took typing, all of that. And through that, I won a scholarship when I graduated to a little school in Little Rock called Drawn's Business School. And so I went there and took all the training I could get. So I was able to get a job in any office. When I would apply, I could get a job because I could type and I learned to take shorthand. And I knew how I had a teacher in high school, got me all kinds of manner books, helped me learn how to talk, eat, be out in public among, you know, nice people, how to fold a napkin, how to set a table, place setting on the table. And she worked with me privately, and I learned to do all that. She was my distant cousin, Hazel McCullough, and she had a big influence on me getting away and helping me. And I had another lady, Catherine Combs. She helped me and wanted to adopt me, and my dad told her he'd sell me to her for $500.
And that broke my heart. That broke my heart. Your father kept trying to sell you around.
Well, I was a commodity. Honey, he owned me, he said.
Oh, God.
And my mother had left at one point, and he had paid her. He kept that check where we couldn't get it. He had paid her $350 for my older brother and I.
Mm.
And bought us back. And he held that over our head. But, you know, in 64, 65, I started learning stuff that I wasn't owned. Oh, my goodness. He didn't own a piece of me. Yeah. So I got more rebellious. I decided I can make it. No more. I had no idea even how to match clothes to go to school. And I left anyway. Fear was my best friend. And it got me away from the situation. But I knew that my brother and sister were being abused, honey. It was just heartbreaking. My sister has no memory. She's blanked all that out, but my baby brother was able to tell me the night I left, my oldest brother molested him.
Okay.
And the heartbreak of it all, honey, is incest destroys. Rape destroys.
Yes.
It breaks us apart, separates us. And rape is against the nature of God. It's everything that God created in us at the beginning of our lives is a holy place with God. And rape invades that place of holiness and corrupts what God meant for us to experience. And it is a sin that in all my studying, very few people ever own their rape or incest, the perpetrators. And I don't believe they have a chance of going to heaven.
I agree.
I'm not in this to make rape victims apologize and take responsibility for their rape. That's the reason I wrote the counseling book, When Forgiveness Isn't Enough. I wrote it under the auspices of Boise State University. Communication Department was approved as an official legal theory. So the book is used in court. I donate it to any law firm that will use it for victims of rape or domestic violence. I'll sign it over and let them use it free. I don't charge for something that I've worked hard to help other people. It's my gift to any victim, that law firm that needs it. I send it anywhere in the United States. I pay for the book and I pay for the postage to get it to a law firm. It's my small way, Regina, of paying back the teachers, the two cooks that helped me, and the neighbor who was brave enough to get me in his car and take me to the bus station. It's one small payback that I can give to the few people in the community who helped me.
God bless you. You broke the cycle, right?
I broke the cycle for me in that family.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I married at 24 exactly what both my mother and dad were. That's in the book, The Hat Man. That story, it is far, I could not imagine. When I left and walked out with that old man carrying me to the bus station, that the future was even worse than what I was leaving. And God has been with me. It's been a journey of faith. And I'm on a journey, Regina, of trying to find a group of investors that's got guts, gumption, and God to want to make a movie out of all three books.
I was just thinking that when I was reading it, I was like, how this is not on the big screen right now? The trauma that you went through, but it's so educational to begin with. So people, yes. Like you said, people can stop the incessant violence. Well, and
I have a script written on Red Bird Phoenix, and it's ready for any director or producer. In fact, I've got producers and directors willing to make the movie. It's just that we need the financing. And I know I taught drama. I got a degree in it. And I know that my books are worth, they'll be better than Sound of Freedom, Where the Crawdad Sings. My story can be have more impact in either story because mine is true. Yeah. And this is my heart. And I'm also working and fighting, trying to get the ability to testify in front of Congress. We need a domestic violence constitutional amendment to protect the millions of women and men, kids who are being abused in this country. And somehow that's my goal. My heart is there. And I'm praying that, you know, my story can reach around the world. There's people, the hope for children, there's very little hope out there yet. This is a political issue. It's a hot political issue. We have many businessmen, people high up in society, doctors, lawyers, we've got beggars. Any echelon of society is guilty of these crimes.
Right.
It's just not the poor, dirty person, homeless person you see. It's in every avenue. Teachers, it's prevalent in school.
Well, if Sound of Freedom taught us nothing, it was that worldwide, this is just a humanitarian problem.
Yes, it is.
It's just, it's appalling. And it's all, like you said, it's all the people with dough. It's all the people that know how to play the system. And it's just a power struggle. And they take and they victimize over and over and over again.
Yes. Well, I was started in the ministry at 16 in the Assemblies of God. And I grew up preaching for them all over. And I began to see, when I was 18 and moved to Little Rock to go to Dron's business school, I had an Assembly of God preacher from Central Assembly try to rape me right in the church sanctuary. They let him walk away. They did nothing to him. And when I came back from Idaho here he was on television still. And I thought, you told me. I filed charges again against him. You know what they told me, Regina? They said every woman that would report a preacher just lust after that preacher. And that was the state superintendent of Arkansas, Assemblies of God. And they did nothing. His name was Larry Moore. He's threatened to sue me if I ever mention his name. So here it is.
You guys are in your 80s now? Are you in your 80s and he's still threatening to sue you?
I'm 76, honey.
Oh, 76. Yeah, 76.
That's okay.
Really? And this guy's doing that?
Oh. They're still covering it up. He's dead. The preacher is dead, but they're still covering it up. I brought it to light. A minister out of Fort Smith had one of the biggest Assembly of God churches up there. He remembered me from college. He stood in front of the board and told them, she is telling you the truth. And they still didn't do nothing to that man. And there's a case in Riverdale, California right now, where the Assemblies of God preacher has abused Chi Alpha, through Chi Alpha and other little boys and girls that was in his school. They're doing absolutely nothing about that. There's one Assembly of God preacher standing up, and he's fighting against what they've allowed to happen through Chi Alpha, which is a college organization through the Assemblies of God. I was a member of that, helped build one of the first Chi Alpha groups at Arkansas Tech during the late, it was 66 through 71 that I worked there and helped build a huge Chi Alpha group.
I was going to say, listening to you, I keep going back to the Bible and how it says, you know, you hurt the littlest ones and you're gone.
Yes.
And
it's better
to
have a millstone
exactly
tied around your neck and cast into the sea. Now, I'll tell you, Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32. That's the basis. That was the web for my communication theory at Boise State University. Dr. Ben Parker told me, he said, I don't believe in God. I'm an agnostic. But he said, you make me want to believe. And he said, what you need to write about is what you know. So we came up with the idea of how the churches force forgiveness on the victims of abuse or domestic violence. Say it's their fault. And so I developed this counseling book. It is so helpful it's for a pastor, police officer, it's for a prosecuting attorney, any law firm could use this book. One of our local prosecuting attorneys here asked me for the book when he got elected to office. He said, I want the book to use in court. I handed it over to him. It needs to be in every courtroom of this country.
With all the stuff that you've done, giving the book to law enforcement, et cetera, can they come back and also ratify your story and then go to Angel Studios and ask for, you know what The Chosen did, where they did their crowdfunding and they got enough money to begin recording?
Well,
their shows?
I would love for Angel Studios to pick up the three books and create a series out of it. Well, you have my full permission to mention it. We've got it out there. We've got enough actors that want to act in the movie that they're all trying to help get this movie out there. I'm well spoken. I interview well on public TV. I fight. You'll look me up. Just put Kay Cordell into Google. You're going to find me all over the internet where I've been fighting in cases in Oregon, Idaho. And I've been fighting since I've been back here for 32 years. I've been helping other women. And I know how to fight. I could make an excellent spokesperson for the movies. For anyone that would like to get behind this, I'm here. I know what I'm talking about. I'm very verbal and I have no fear or shame about talking about rape and incest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can only tell you that I would be more than happy if I come across somebody, more than happy to talk to them about that and direct them your way, if that's okay.
I'll say this. I travel to any church, any group. All I ask is that my airfare or gas and food and lodging is paid for. I don't ask for anything else to be paid.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't ask for a stipend at all. I come because that's what God, he's led me into this ministry. I'm an exceptionally fine minister, if the church needs help, I'll sit down with the pastor and say, what do I need to preach on that will help your church? And that way the pastor has got a basis to help his own people.
Right. Well, Kay, we're going to be wrapping up right now. Thank you so much for talking to us. As I said, I'm going to give people all the information I can when I publish the podcast. And I thank you so much. And I look forward to hopefully chatting with you again soon.
Yes, I'd love to do it, Regina. And thank you so much. God bless you.
Oh, God bless you too. I want to take this opportunity again to thank Kay for sharing with us that amazing story of survival. And I want to let you know again, if you'd like to contact her, please feel free to email her at cae234@msn.com. I'll say that again. cae234@msn.com. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of her. So thanks again to Kay. And the next conversation we'll be having, it'll actually be a Will Within Chosen Edition. And I'll be talking with Joan Watson. She is a prolific author, speaker, podcaster, blogger, and she's Catholic. And when The Chosen started, we had an opportunity to listen to a lot of people giving their opinions from the Protestant perspective, and she gives it from the Catholic. So it was so much fun talking to her. She's a delight. So the next podcast will be up will be the Will Within podcast, The Chosen Edition. So without any further ado, until next time, my Will Within friends, be blessed.